Okay, in our study last week, we sought to emphasize, actually the last 2 weeks, we sought to emphasize the fact that we can depend upon our brethren for encouragement, and that the text of Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 24 and 25, as we assemble together, we are to exhort one another. That indicates that we can have a positive impact upon the lives of our brethren by encouraging them and edifying them as we come together to worship God. We also mentioned that since that is the case, that is that you can receive benefit from your brethren when you come and attend worship, that the opposite is true, the corollary, that is that you can be an encouragement to others when you come and attend worship. In fact, that's, I think the text of Hebrews 10 indicates that's the reason or motivation for said attendance, that our purpose in that is to exhort and encourage others. So the question, the first question that we have in our series of three at the end of our lesson is it possible to fulfill those kinds of obligations to your brethren if you do not come? In other words, we're asking for the idea of whether it's optional. Okay, I'm not doing this. I'm not consistently and regularly attending services, but I can, instead of doing that, fulfill my responsibilities to my brethren in some other way. Is that possible? Is the question. I see heads shaking no. Yes, Ian?
There's a series of congregations on the area called the Life Church.tv, and the way they word it is that they have a central location where they broadcast one preacher preaching to all of their several locations. Can that same preacher edify in the same way that one could congregation, that could they speak to the members after the sermon and answer questions? Could they be there to be edified themselves by the encouragement of being told that the sermon and their questions? I want to learn more. And the total answer is no, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a, I think that's something that's fairly typical as far as the concept of convenience being a Christian and making it convenient for yourself. I don't want to go. I don't want to be involved. So this is another way it can be done. You know, the first time I ever saw this kind of an attitude expressed, there was, I believe it was in Lubbock, Texas, and I may be mistaken in this, but there was a congregation, a Church of Christ, that determined to have, in effect, drive-through communion service, where individuals who were going on a trip, or they had something to do that day, they wanted to partake of the Lord's Supper, but they didn't want to spend the time in service, that they could drive up, the emblems would be served to them, a prayer would be offered, and then they would go on their way. And which, you know, it's an absurd thing, but it's no more absurd than what you just mentioned, is that individuals thinking that their Christian affiliation is sufficiently committed. There's commitment, insufficient commitment, simply by occasionally listening to a video on the computer or on the TV. Now that's not to say that, you know, we've got situations. In fact, the Woodmont congregation, when Jeff Smith was preaching there, had a sudden on Sundays. What Jeff would basically do is turn around his laptop, point it up at the pulpit, and they were streaming their worship service on those days. And there were times when individuals who were either shut in or ill or unable to come could listen in and benefit from that. And I've even talked about that during the time that my father was ill. There was a Sunday that I was with him in the hospital. And no, it wasn't a Sunday. It was during a gospel meeting. And I was with him in the hospital, and Brother P.A. Foster was leading the prayer in the assembly that night at the gospel meeting and prayed for my dad. And that was something that was very meaningful to me. So you can get some encouragement and edification in that way. But we're talking about the responsibility not, again, to be receiving edification, which can be done. You can receive edification if you're listening to an audio tape or a CD of a preacher or maybe watching a video or something like that. But to actually be fulfilling your responsibilities to your brethren, it's not possible unless you're there. And again, please understand this. Some say, well, I could do it this particular way. But what you have to recognize is that God is the one who has designed the means of accomplishing this. That there is the instructions that are given to us divinely as to how it is that we're to involve ourselves and what extent that involvement must take and the way in which it is to be accomplished. And we do not have the right or authority to substitute our own preferences for what God has revealed that we are to do. And that, of course, is something that we very clearly establish in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 is not a suggestion. It is a command not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And the purpose of that assembly is edification, so you cannot fulfill your responsibilities to your brethren to edify them unless you are assembling with them and regular in that assembly. So I think that's something that's intrinsic in that text. Okay? Comments, question? Yes?
I was going to say, we've had members of this congregation that would tell you that the only command, only service you're commanded to go to is on Sunday morning to take the Lord's Supper. Now, these same people who are here, every time the doors were open, they said, we only have one commandment, and that's for Sunday morning. So they throw away Hebrews 10:25 and all the other things about how Christians help one another when they're assembled together.
And again, one of the problems with that kind of an attitude, number one, that's not what the verse in Hebrews 10:25 says. It doesn't say the assembly, it says the assembling. In other words, when brethren come together for the purpose of edification, you have a responsibility to be there. So if the brethren have chosen to come on other days other than the first day of the week, then there is a need for you to be a part of that to encourage them. But the second thing that I think is problematic is that idea that you approach your Christian interactions and your responsibilities before God as a matter of duty rather than out of a sense of love and desire to do as much as you can. In other words, when an individual comes and says, okay, this is all that I'm required to do, and so this is all that I'm going to do, that very attitude is something that's antithetical to what it means to be a child of God. If you hear this, that you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your spirit, and then someone comes along and says, this is all that he expects of me, and that's the very minimum that I'm going to give to him. Well, that's an attitude that doesn't jive with the greatest commandment, which is to love God.
Another thing, one time we had a family here, I think there were two sisters and two brothers, and all of them came here. And when they wanted to go to the lake, they'd all go to the lake, and they'd go back there and get stuff for the bar supper, and then go have services out at the lake on Sunday morning. And they'd argue that that was an assembly.
Yeah, I know. and something that I've seen practiced and actually a long time ago participated in myself. But again, when we're talking about the assembly, what you find as according to the Bible pattern is a congregational assembly. The command is for brethren to come together for the purpose of assembling as a church, as a congregation. And while individuals can assemble, they do not make by that assembly a church. In other words, if we come together in someone's house and we have songs and sing as individuals, that's one thing. It's not the church doing that. We as individual Christians certainly can do that. Paul and Silas sang in prison. And we have a number of other examples of those kinds of things. And that didn't make up a congregation or a church. I think the litmus test with regard to this is that as we see that is to be done in an assembly, the Lord's Supper, there are other things that are done outside of an assembly of a local congregation. But there are certain things that are limited to that assembly. And one example that would make it, I think, abundantly obvious is in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 with regard to the meeting out of discipline. Now, discipline is something with if a person's been withdrawn from, we have the responsibility all of the time to refrain from social interaction. That's what it's saying in 1 Corinthians 5. But the Apostle Paul says when you come together, that you are to withdraw yourselves from this individual. That's a congregational action. It's not something that's done outside of a congregational assembly. It's something within the assembly. And I think that can be very clearly paralleled with the Lord's Supper as well. Okay, second question here. When I attend worship services, how may I build up my brethren while we engage in worshiping God? And I just kind of clarify with regard to this. We spent our time in our discussion last week looking at the various acts of worship. And we acknowledged the fact that by singing, we are edifying one another. By praying, we are edifying one another. By preaching of the gospel, we are receiving edification, and the Lord's Supper is likewise something that builds us up. So we understand and recognize that. But is there anything outside of the acts of worship themselves that can be something that is an encouragement and a strengthening of brethren as you come together? I've got something specific in mind, so if I'm not being clear enough, I'll answer it. But just anybody have any mind, anything? Yes, Jerry.
It's the social interaction. This is where you can find out whether that member has a problem, something that you can help them with. You're just sitting in the pew singing and praying. I don't know those things, but if you have an interaction, whether before services, after services, you're going to be able to help them.
Okay. Now, and in fact, I've actually got that as the bottom sentence in my answer as well. But I say visitation, exhortation, expressions of love before and after services, though that is better put under the next question. So I really, you've answered the next question in regard to that. It's not exactly what, you know, the good thing about having discussion questions, you're the ones who write the questions, you know what you're pointing to. And so that's valid, I think. But I think it more alongside of outside of the worship itself, in what ways do I edify my brethren when I'm with them? So I think that answers better the second question than the one we're having here.
And your question is, why are we engaged in worship? While we're having these engaged in the act of worship? And this may be, without this question out of mind, maybe a little negative, but it's still very important. We need to be very, very careful as individuals while we're in the act of worship, minimize distractions that may interfere with someone else's worship. And that can be any of a number of things. I am easily distracted. If I'm sitting beside someone who's looking like this, at a baby across the room, my mind is immediately attracted to that. If someone's cell phone goes off, and I know we forget, you know, to turn our cell phone down, but we need to be careful to do that. There's lots of things that can distract us. Well, some things we can't help. Babies, coughing, you know, when we're sick, we're going to cough. But we can take our babies out, you know, and as parents, we need to be careful to teach those young children to be quiet in the assembly.
Right.
And we don't do that by keeping them in the assembly and letting them be noisy.
Right. Let's just touch about on this as far as the kids, because we've got parents here that we got a lot of young parents that are up here. And so there's something to be pointed out with regard to this. Number one, while babies can be a distraction, the way in which you can teach your children not to be a distraction is by taking them out, dealing with the misbehavior, and again, it changes as they get older, and then immediately bring them back in. In other words, you cannot teach them not to be a distraction by allowing them to be a distraction and doing nothing about it. You also cannot teach them not to be a distraction by, when they begin to misbehave, take them out and reward them for their misbehavior by leaving them out and letting them play or do what they want out. So it's a fine line that every single one of us who have grown kids, like Brantley and Josh and others who are here, that some of us older people who had children that we had to raise, that, and by the way, my wife did it all because I was up there preaching, so she gets all the credit with regard to that. But it's something that with consistency and diligent effort, it can be accomplished. Some children more difficult than others because of different personalities, but it can be done. And it needs to be done for their benefit, certainly. And so that consistency and that effort, it's really, really hard to be a young parent for that period of time where that training is ongoing. You know, it's hard to concentrate. It's hard to get a lot out of worship. But you're doing such a wonderful work in showing your children the importance of assembly, the reverence of worship, and those kinds of things, that when you find all of a sudden your, let's say your four-year-old is sitting quietly and maybe even occasionally paying attention or getting something out of the service and wanting to sing along in the songbook, and with Josh, and he was the only one I trusted out of my four kids to do that, but from the age of six, I think, six on, he sat on the front pew by himself. And I could trust him to do that because he had been trained, had that kind of a personality. We're pretty malleable, so he was easy to train in that regard. And so, you know, that was something that I was proud of, that we were able to instill that in him so that, you know, he was able to sit there and be still and conduct himself appropriately through the entire service. But it wasn't something that was natural. It was something that he was trained to do. And so that type of discipline is very important.
I've trained seven little girls to behave in worship services. A lot of parents here that have done that. If you come and ask us how we did it, we'll be happy to tell you. I bet we've got some pretty good ideas that might help you. All you've got to do is ask. The biggest, most important thing you touched on all though is there's a fact involved in the age of the child, of course.
Yeah, sure.
But the child has to learn. They learn by association. They have to associate with misbehavior in the auditorium with an unpleasant experience in the foyer.
Right.
Once they've made that connection, quit misbehaving in the auditorium. You go out, you deal with it, you come right back in. That's what you were saying. I've taken girls out four or five times in a row. You know? And they get tired of the experience of
having the home. I understand. Okay, a couple things I want to add to this. Dennis indicated he's easily distracted. I don't think he's quite as easily distracted as he says he is. So when parents are doing this, we should not be in any way upset with them for what they're doing. We should recognize it for what it is and need to train our children. And we should recognize our own responsibility not to allow ourselves to be distracted by especially that. Now, you know, the phone's going off, you know, that kind of thing. Other things that happen. But when a parent is doing what they're supposed to be doing and dealing with their child, you need to have the maturity and the focus and the discipline to just, you know, trek through that and not allow that to be an overt distraction to you. And so I've said this to many of you at one time or another when you've apologized for the fact that your child was loud. And I assert this, that I can out-yell any child. And the day I can is when I'll stop preaching. There have been a couple of times when it was close. But typically, if a baby's crying and causing a disturbance, I will still be heard as a preacher. That's not going to stop. And if people are willing to just focus on what I have to say, that they'll be able to at least get the gist of what I'm saying despite this distraction that's there. Okay, so keep that in mind. I do want, because I don't want to put the onus with regard to distraction when a child is misbehaving, because children do, the onus is on the parent, or the blame is on the parent, if the parent is doing what they're supposed to be doing and trying to train the child. Now, what you mentioned, that may be negative, so not exactly what I'm saying. Basically, that's the flip side of what I am saying. And this is my point in this regard, that when you are present and individuals in the worship see you there, but they also notice that focus, notice that you are actively involved in the singing, notice that you are reverently bowed or interested in listening to the preaching that's being done. All of those aspects, that it's obvious that as you're partaking of the Lord's Supper, that it's something that is of importance to you. And by the way, if you're doing that, typically they're not going to notice you. What they will notice is the fact that you're passing a note during the observance of the Lord's Supper, or you're not singing when everyone else is raising their voices to God, or you're nodding off or not involved in the sermon, or, you know, different things like that. That can be a discouragement. But when brethren see you at worship and see that you're not there merely as a matter of duty, but because you are involved in that worship and desirous of being there and fully committed to the acts and what you're doing and praise to God, and that's a great encouragement. You hear a preacher every once in a while, he says, you know, he'll ask people to turn to a passage of scripture, and you hear the pages rustling, and he says, well, I appreciate you, brethren, doing that. Makes my heart to be uplifted in hearing those pages turn, because I know that you're doing what I ask and turning to scriptures. Well, yeah, it's an encouragement to him because he knows that people are paying attention to what he has to say. Kinds of things are
important. They have laptops.
Well, some of them do, yeah, and I recognize
that. No answer.
Okay, anybody else? Yeah, Josh, did you have something, or were you going to?
Well, I
took your thunder.
Actually, okay. Go where you were going.
Yeah.
And you asked one of the answers to the question, and it seemed to me that you actually hit the answer in the question. We may build each other up because we are engaged in worship. I mean, we are seen as engaged in worship. That is edifying.
That's an encouragement. Okay, so that's kind of the point that I was making. All right, then the third question is, outside of the worship itself, in what ways do I edify my brethren? Jerry gave a good answer to that. My answer was hospitality, benevolence, friendship, expressions of joy in our brotherhood, joy in the simple pleasures of the common faith. And those are all basically taken from Acts chapter 2. Remember where they were with one accord, that some sold what they had and gave it to those who had need. They were practicing hospitality from house to house, and that they had that faith and the singleness of heart. And that's all indicative of individuals who were involved with one another as a church. And so in addition to that, we're talking about one of the places in which this can occur is immediately before or after the worship services as we're gathered together for that purpose. I do not like the fact that so many of you get here last second. And there are a couple of reasons, three or four reasons for that. Number one is that it necessitates the saying of the prayer at the beginning of class until everybody's settled. I don't like doing that. I want to say the prayer at the beginning, but I don't typically because of that. Secondly, when it's time on a Sunday morning or Wednesday night and it's about time to start, the bell's about to ring or maybe just has rung and there's only half the people here that eventually show up, it's kind of a discouragement. I'm thinking nobody's going to be here tonight. That discourages me. Having said that, I do understand the difficulty always of getting here on time. So if you're going to be late once in a while, I acknowledge that. But I ask that you consider, brethren, in regard to that and try to get here on time or a little bit early. But the amazing thing about this congregation is, despite how many get here very last minute, and it seems like they can't hardly get here, some work and it's far away, I understand those things. It's amazing how many of you will stay after, how long you will stay after in order to visit with one another. And I appreciate that. Now, if the person who's locking up needs to go, don't get upset with him when he says, if you're going to continue to visit, visit out on the porch. But I appreciate that because that's an indication of caring, love, and concern for one another. You enjoy each other's company, and so you visit together. That's the type of thing that is an encouragement. So see, I got my pet peeve in, and then I got to encourage you as well. I praise you for what you're doing. That's always the preacher's dream, be able to criticize a little bit, but then leave it on a good note. All right. So anybody else with regard to that last question?